With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the penultimate La Liga Lowdown match day recap. It's match day 37. There was a lot of games going on. My name is Rory Barlow. I'm your host. I'm joined by Matt Clark, the omnipresent eye of Spanish football. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm very well, thank you, Rory. It was an intense Sunday afternoon watching all those games unfold at the same time, as you rightly say, and plenty of drama, plenty of things decided. So lots to talk about.
Yeah, I could have done with your sort of all-seeing eye today, because it was hard work keeping my eye on about four or five different screens and trying to keep abreast of everything that was going on. There was plenty of going on. I think this week we should start with a relegation battle, to be honest, because I think that's where the news is. We have certainly the biggest confirmation I think we can take from this Sunday's action, from this weekend's action, is the relegation of Alaves. They went down 3-1 to Levante away from home. That confirmed their relegation. They can no longer get out. This was kind of something we saw coming, but ultimately, even when they were playing against sort of an already relegated Levante team, they just didn't have enough to get the job done, did they?
No, and I mean, Alaves have, we've said this quite a lot, that you know, ultimately sacking managers left, right and centre is going to catch up with you. And they were so desperate two seasons ago to be in Primera for their centenary season. They achieved that. And then last season, they were in trouble again during their centenary season. They brought in Javi Calleja. He saved them. And then the first sign of a blip this year, and he sacked at Christmas. And you just think, well, here they go again. This is like a never-ending saga. It's just, you know, rinse and repeat. They brought in Mendilibar, which you think is a great fit, but that doesn't work out at all. And then Julio Velasquez comes in, and to his credit, they won all the games at Mendizorroza. They fought hard. They won in midweek, did all they could to give themselves the best chance going into these final two games. But yeah, the game against Levante, of course, Levante already down, as you say. And Alaves get the best possible start going ahead. Josselu, who's only scored a couple of goals since February, so it was important for him to get back amongst the goals. And yeah, it just... Obviously, we couldn't see the whole game unfold live because there were all the other games together, but just the way Levante were able to come back into the game was just tells you everything you need to know about Alaves' kind of inability to hold the lead and to kind of grind it through. And if they weren't playing at home, you know, their away form has been poor. And you felt like for them to have any chance, they would have had to play every game at Mendy. And of course, that isn't the case. So... yeah, Alaves, it's a shame in some ways to see them go. I know a lot of neutrals aren't a big fan of them, but they're a really passionate fan base. As you said, Victoria Gasteiz is a lovely part of the world to be a Primera club. So it's a shame. And we'll see what some of the players who might move on, the likes of Hosselu, I'm sure, will be in Primera next season. But yeah, sadly, El Glorioso won't be.
Yeah, definitely. It was, as you say, kind of fitting. I think that Hosselu scored a lovely goal, to be honest, as they went down. And yeah, Alaves, I think I've been quite vocal about it. We both have, about their sort of lack of organisation. I think there's a lack of investment. And to be honest, if we want to compare them with the efforts that other clubs have made, then yeah, they do need to be doing more to be staying up. And I think it's maybe a good reality check for the board there as to what they can expect to get out of it if they're going to plan seasons that way.
Moving on, just to add on that, yeah, go for it. At the end of the game, obviously, you know, it's a real kind of pity party because Levante fans and players are in tears because they're already down, and and Alaves are joining him. Alessio Lisci was consoling the Alaves players as much as his own. But when the Alaves fans went over to that corner of the Ciutat to kind of reconcile with their fans, according to the images I was seeing, it seemed to be more of a kind of hostile, furious reaction from the Alaves travelling fans rather than a kind of appreciation for the efforts. I think there could be quite a lot of problems there between the board and the fans, as you say, that they weren't happy at all with the way that this has happened.
Yeah, I did also see a picture of Lisci out on his own on the pitch after the match, and there's a lot of moments being taken in by people at the end of these games. It's the last home game of the season for many clubs. Coming on to sort of the side that, as it stands, would be joining them in the second division, Cadiz. They got a 1-1 draw against Real Madrid, but it still wasn't enough to keep them out of the relegation zone. They did everything but win in this match almost as well. I mean, they had a penalty. Negredo had it saved by Lunin. It was one of a number of saves that Lunin made from Negredo. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to sort of have a go at them or be critical of them for getting a draw against Real Madrid, but as it stands, it's not enough.
No, and I mean, you can see before the game, the Cadiz fans really believe that, in contrast to Alaves, you feel like the fans and the club are pretty united. There was a lot of discontent when Alvaro Cervera was sacked, and rightly so, I think we all thought. But to Sergio's credit, he's come in and given them a fighting chance, and you know, they won at Camp Nou, and then they fell behind early. But you know, the way the fans supported the team, you just knew that they were going to come back into it, and sure enough, they did. A lovely goal from Sobrino, and then Alvaro Negredo has that chance to give them the lead. And when you look at the Real Madrid lineup and you see Benzema's not there, Vinicius is not there, Courtois not there, I mean, Levante would have been thinking, you could have done this the other night against us, couldn't you? But Cadiz had every chance to win this game, and again, it seems harsh to say it, but they really probably should have, because what they've lost now is the ability to determine on themselves to stay up, because now they're level on points with Mallorca, and they would lose the head-to-head with Mallorca. So if Mallorca match their result in next weekend's final day, then it's sadly Cadiz at full.
Yeah, Mariano gave Real Madrid the lead in that match before Negredo equalised, and the reason that they are in the relegation zone, because they started the day outside of the relegation zone, was the fact that Mallorca got a big late win, last minute stoppage time goal from Abdon Prats, absolute scenes at Son Moix. I'm not going to call it the Visit Mallorca Stadi. But yeah, it was a good game against Rayo. It was pretty end-to-end at times. They took the lead for Vedat Muriqi, and then Pate Sis sort of glanced a header in from a corner. This was a good watch, wasn't it, Matt?
It was, yeah. I mean, two sides that came up last season, not much expected of either, really. But of course, Rayo had already certified their survival under Andoni Iraola, and they'd been hammered at home by Villarreal. So you're probably thinking, this is a great opportunity for Mallorca to go and win. They started like a train. Muriqi's header was fantastic, just an absolute textbook centre-forward's header. And he's been brilliant for them since arriving in January. I know he hasn't scored for a month, but he has scored 5 goals since arriving, which is, you know, probably up there with Borja Mayoral and only behind Aubameyang in terms of involvement since signing in January. So a really good acquisition for them, and he's, you know, he gives everything for the team. He fights hard, he holds the ball up, brings others into play. It's exactly what you need, especially now Aguirre's in there. He wants, you know, a kind of fighting team, and Muriqi embodies that. And yeah, you think they've got the hammer blow when Rayo equalised through Pate Sis, but then again, they go again, determined to find that winner. And it's great that it's Abdon Prats. I mean, first of all, what a tash. And second of all, it's a scrappy goal, but he won't care one bit. And, you know, that's, as Mallorca suited, that's his goal. He scored a fantastic overhead last season in Segunda. And then I think he only scored one other goal in La Liga this season, but that one could be absolutely priceless for them.
Yeah, absolutely massive goal. So those two teams, Cadiz and Mallorca, level on points. 36 points they both have. The other team that's still in it is Granada. We're going to come on to sort of the flip side of, they were playing Betis, who obviously had involvement in European competitions. Was there anything you wanted to say on Granada first?
Just that I think I was seeing Heath Chesters was tweeting earlier. He's obviously, it was a tough fixture for them away to Betis. They've done really well the first 4 games under Aitor Caranca, unbeaten, 2 draws, 2 wins, the point at the Wanda Metropolitano. Winning at home again, which they struggled to do in the calendar year, really. So there's a lot of momentum behind Granada, and I think going to Betis was always going to be tough with the fans wanting to send their team off after a great season for Los Verdes Blancos. And to lose 2-0, one of them was a late goal, which was, potentially offside. It wasn't offside, but it was close. It was originally disallowed. I think there's no shame there. They still showed they're fighting hard, and they have it in their own hands next week, which is all they can ask for. They're at home to Espanyol, who, frankly, are not really there at the moment, are they? So Granada have every chance to get the win they need, and I would expect them to.
Yeah, and let's not beat a bit of the bush. I mean, I didn't get the chance to watch this game intently, but just based on the chances, they did seem a little bit unfortunate not to get something from the game. But Sella with a great goal line clearance, but it did have good consequences for Betis. They can no longer finish below seventh. To speak on Betis, to speak on Sevilla, who secured themselves a Champions League spot, we obviously went to the man in Seville who knows all about the sort of rivalry between the two. Matt, you spoke to Alan Feely. We're going to slide into a break just after that, but don't go anywhere, and we'll catch you on the other side of Alan.
Champions a 5 para el final, para poner en su equipo matemáticamente en la Champions la próxima temporada, para hacer desvanecerse el sueño del Betis.
I'm here with Alan Feely, and we're here to talk through the dramatic final penultimate day in La Liga in regards to the top four. And of course, it was the two Sevilla clubs battling it out. Alan, you are resident of Seville, so you're the perfect man to have to discuss all of these implications and ramifications from these matches. So first of all, how are you?
Very good. Enjoying the final end of the season. It's been an intense year for both clubs in Seville, obviously. Lots to play for even going into this match day. So yeah, it was an interesting day for both perspectives, and look forward to discussing it with you, Matt.
Absolutely. Well, let's get into that then. Ahead of the round, Betis were 5 points off Sevilla in fourth spot. But they needed a big swing, really, to achieve it. But Sevilla were away at the Wanda Metropolitano, and Betis were at home to struggling Granada. So it was definitely possible, and the first half went to plan for Betis. A Juanmi goal for Betis, and then Atleti also took the lead in Madrid through José María Jiménez. So at half-time, the gap was just 2 points, wasn't it, Alan? Betis believed.
Yeah, absolutely. To be honest, going into this game, the narrative was on Betis' side, because it's been a good season for them. They won the Copa del Rey. They've been performing above, you know, their expectations. They're a team that's more than the sum of their parts in many ways. And Sevilla aren't. They're underperforming. They're below par. They have a talented squad. Some very, very good players. But they have been playing sparkling football, or winning football, or convincing football this season. So the narrative from Betis' side was all, you know, positive. It was a free hit for them because they've already got European League football. That was their ambition this season. They've won silverware. Going into this final run of games, they had five finals after the Copa del Rey victory. They wanted to try and push Sevilla to get that top four place, and also, you know, Atletico Madrid and Barcelona. And whereas for Sevilla, it was more consolidating the top four place, you know, the third top four finish in 3 years, for the first time in the modern history. And it was important for them because they obviously failed in Europe, in both the Champions League and the Europa League. They failed in the Copa. They've not really convinced in La Liga in the second half of the season. So for them to win, you know, that trophy, we could say, or finishing in top four and getting Champions League football next season was hugely significant for them, because if they failed, then Betis were going to come in and take it from them from, you know, around the bend. Like, so it was very significant in both perspectives, because they wanted to finish top four and they wanted to stop Betis from finishing top four as well. So it was a very important trophy for them, you could say, you know. So yeah, very tense game, very tense day for both clubs, and Sevilla prevailed in the end.
Yes, it was a late Youssef En-Nesyri header flying in the box to grab that equaliser for Sevilla, and the scenes of celebration told you everything about what it meant to them, their fans, and Julen Lopetegui himself. There's been a lot of speculation around his future in the last few days. I remember you saying last week that you think a change of cycle was needed, and it appeared in the media that that would be the case. Monchi said after the game that those rumours were false, but of course, we know what Monchi's like. He could be keeping his cards close to his chest. Remains to be seen what happens. But First of all, what's your take on Lopetegui as a whole, and what do you think will happen in the summer for Sevilla?
I think Lopetegui's been a very good coach for Sevilla. I mean, he's come in and built a very solid, consistent and, you know, organised team. Three seasons, top four, is nothing to be sniffed at. It's a very impressive record. I really like Lopetegui as a person and a coach. I think he's a very good guy. He's very straight-laced. He's very direct in terms of the way he operates. He's built a team that's very defensively organised. You know, one of the best defences in Europe, I would say. And that's his strength. They're very difficult to beat. They're very competitive. They're very disciplined. A strong Argentinian core. But the reality is that when it comes to the constructive phase of play, or breaking down opponents who are sitting in a low block, he isn't as skilled in getting the best out of his team. Now, it's true that he's not had great options going forward. He's not had a striker that you could say is a top-class player throughout his tenure at Sevilla. He's missed a creative midfielder since Ever Banega left for Saudi Arabia in 2020. But the reality is he's a conservative coach. He plays with the handbrake on. And I think that, you know, this Sevilla team, crucially, are less than some of their parts. And I think that, you know, if you brought in another coach, you could get more out of them from an attacking perspective, could make more bold decisions. They could go higher and higher. You know, I mean, at this moment in time, Atletico Madrid are at a weak moment. So are Barca. They're in a moment of transition. Madrid are very strong, of course, but there's an opportunity there to, you know, gatecrash that elite, you could say. They're already in the top four, but they could potentially gatecrash and go for a title challenge, or, you know, win a Copa del Rey, or go deep in the Champions League. And the squad is capable, but I don't think that Lopetegui and the way he operates with this team is capable of getting that to fruition, you know. So I think that while Lopetegui's done very, very well with Sevilla since he's been there, for sure, he's had a very, very good spell there. He's brought them on leaps and bounds. He's done great work. I think that if you bring in a new coach now this summer, an adventurous coach, a younger coach, someone who's more open to ideas, who will bring in fresh enthusiasm, I think they go a long way and they can improve even more, you know. So I think it's, even though Manchi is, you know, putting cold water on this idea, I think that it's going to happen. Everyone I spoke to here in Seville, all the journalists who are in the know, have said to me that it's going to happen. It's the case. It needs to be the case. And I agree, to be honest with you. So while Lopetegui is someone who's deserving of respect for his time here in Sevilla, I think that a change is necessary and is also a good idea, to be honest with you.
Yeah, as you say, very difficult to kind of get a kind of glass half full or empty perspective. There is that. Three successive top four finishes, which only one other coach in Sevilla's history has achieved, Helenio Herrera in the 50s. But then, of course, following last season's title push, the second half of this season has been pretty stuttering with so many draws, their record number of draws in a La Liga season. So, yeah, potentially an amicable split to come in the summer. As for Betis, another team, obviously, right on your doorstep, a fantastic win for them again, beating Granada, who were unbeaten under Aitor Caranca until today. A brace for Juanmi. He's still in with a chance of becoming the top Spanish scorer in La Liga this season. Brace today. And Pellegrini's 50th win in charge of Betis. How good a job has he done?
Superb. Absolutely superb. I mean, like, it's kind of a different. I remember being in the Plaza Nueva when they were celebrating the Copa win 2 weeks ago. And when Pellegrini took to the stage, everybody was singing his name, Pellegrini, Pellegrini. It was really a remarkable moment. You know, I mean, like, I think, and I said earlier on Twitter this week, actually, I think that, you know, the success of Betis and the success of Pellegrini especially has amplified and turned the heat on Lopetegui, because if Betis weren't winning the Copa, weren't playing quite, you know, scintillating champagne football, didn't have such a good relationship with their coach, then maybe Lopetegui would have got away with one, because, you know, the comparison here in Seville is very, very strong. And the Sevillistas have told me, no, we don't judge ourselves against Betis. We judge ourselves against Madrid or against Atletico or whatever. But it's not the case. It's not true. You know, the rivalry is very intense here. And the reality is that, you know, Betis are in a perfect storm. I mean, Pellegrini is a very, very good coach. Like Carlo Ancelotti, he's created kind of a very simple, organized, positive atmosphere at the club that has got the best out of the players at the disposal. And they have good players, you know. I mean, Sergio Canales, Juanmi, Nabil Fekir, Borja Iglesias, Andres Guardado, Guido Rodriguez. That's a front five that's very strong and very talented. It rivals, you know, the best teams in La Liga, if not Europe. So to have a coach who can come in and get the best out of those players without signing anybody new is really quite impressive, you know, and that's what they've done. They won 2-0 today. They deserve the victory, in my opinion, even though Granada have improved greatly under Aitor Cuenca in recent weeks and months. But yeah, it's a positive moment for Real Betis, to be honest with you. I mean, next season, if they make smart acquisitions in the summer, I think they'll probably lose a couple of players. Maybe Nabil Fekir can move on. But, you know, if the rumour mill is correct, they'll bring in Isco in his place. So it's a good deal, you could say, you know. So, yeah, I think it's a positive moment at Real Betis. I think Pellegrini is at the right place for him in this point of his career. I think that there's good players there who are content at the club. I mean, the likes of Borja, Sergio Canales, you know, they're going to stay there for the foreseeable future. So, yeah, I think it's a kind of a perfect synthesis, you could say. And, you know, La Vida Betica, as I say here, the kind of the Betis lifestyle, the Betis momentum, the Betis synthesis is very, very positive. So, yeah, I'm confident that during the summer and during into the next season, they'll be happy with how things go.
Yeah, onwards and upwards for Betis. A very positive time to be a Betis fan, as you say so well there. But, of course, it is Sevilla who take that fourth spot on this penultimate day of La Liga. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Alan. It's always a pleasure to hear from you again. And enjoy the last game.
No worries, Matt. Pleasure as always. Thanks for having me on.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the La Liga Lowdown podcast. It's the Match Day 37 recap. Betis, obviously, they won't be able to finish above Sevilla. They secured their Champions League spot, but there were Europa League spots on the line this week, and Real Sociedad secured theirs. That was against Villarreal, and obviously one of our main sources of info on Villarreal is Luis Scatterbude, who Matt spoke to evaluate their defeat to La Liga.
Le da un vuelco al marcador en la cerámica. 29 de la segunda parte. La Real hacia Europa. Marcó Zubimendi. Villarreal 1, Real Sociedad.
I'm now joined by Luis Scattergood to reflect on Villarreal's game against Real Sociedad. Luis, first of all, how are you? Welcome back on the pod.
I'm all right, thanks, Matt. How about you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. It was a direct duel for Europa League positions, wasn't it? Ahead of the game, of course, Villarreal needing to beat Real Sociedad to overtake them on head-to-head. And the first half went pretty well, didn't it? Coquelin giving them the half-time lead, and at that point, all was going rather swimmingly. But second half, Real Sociedad came back, and in the end, it's now Real Sociedad who seal Europa League place, and Villarreal will be seventh at best. So how do you reflect on the game?
Not specifically on the game itself, but as a whole, in terms of the season, I feel I'm a bit disappointed, but I feel like there's a different section of the fan base that wanted different things. Some people would be happy with the Champions League, some people would have wanted more in the league. I think it's a bit of an ongoing debate whether we should have really prioritised the league a little bit more, but Champions League semi-finals for us is absolutely outrageous to even to think about now. When I went, it made it, contextualised it so much more. But in terms of this game, I feel like it's just defined our season, to be honest, especially domestically. We've had so many poor results. You think about the last couple of months, losing to Alaves, losing to Levante, who were both already down after today and last week. I feel like we definitely could have stepped up to and like made a mark on those games. Like, we've beaten up Betis at the Via Marine, we've taken the game to Real Madrid twice. It's been very disappointing and very frustrating from a fan's point of view. But from the outside, from just a general La Liga neutral watcher, I would be so mixed up, because you put us up there with our squad as one of the deepest squads in the league, and one that really should be challenging for the title. I feel like we'd literally just Sevilla, but toned down. I'm not sure what we should do next season. Maybe the Conference League, being in that, if we're not even there yet, but if we get that, I feel like that would be better for us, because this season it's been just Champions League. It's been, well, we did get knocked out of the Copa del Rey quite early, to be honest, but we've had to prioritise different things, and it's just been kind of stressful. So I feel like having a rest for the players will be very good, especially considering half of them have been injured the entire time. Dan Juma and Gerald Moreno. And I feel like the summer transfer window will be really beneficial for us as well, because we'll be able to see who we offload, because there's been rumours around Arno Dan Juma and Paul Torres exiting, so it'll be interesting to see how we can rebuild around that. But as much as I've waxed lyrical about it being really frustrating in the last few months, there's so much excitement to be kind of uphold over the next few months with the stadium redevelopments and possibility of European football. And yes, we have eternal memories from this season, from getting to the Champions League semi-final, so I don't feel like we can be too hard on ourselves, because at the end of the day, we are Villarreal.
Yeah, it's so hard to, as you say, contextualise it and really put it into any kind of perspective, because, you know, you've knocked out Juventus, Bayern Munich, you pushed Liverpool so hard in that second leg, 45 minutes away from taking them to extra time and potentially reaching a Champions League final, which would have been absolutely historic for the club, as you say. And yeah, coming off the back of a 5-1 against Rayo, where everything seemed to click, and then again a set piece goal to get them off here, you're thinking, yep, Emery's been on the training ground, he's been working the players, they know what they're doing, they're on for this, you know, Europa League charge. But then to lose in such a way at home in front of the fans, it's a deflating end, isn't it? And as you say, seventh isn't even secured yet, because only a point clear of Athletic Club now, who will be going all for it in the final game. And Villarreal's fixture, where is it? Oh yeah, Camp Nou, where Emery doesn't do so well, does he?
Great.
Sorry to put that one to you.
I'm drooling just thinking about it.
Yeah, do you think with Barca already secured for second, do you think that Villarreal will be able to go there and get enough to qualify then for seventh for the Conference League?
I mean, to be fair, when Barcelona came and played at La Ceramica, I feel like we had them in the first half. Well, we've heard that one before, haven't we? But again, just capitulated in the second half. It's just been the story of our season, as I mentioned a couple of minutes ago. I feel like we can get a result, but there's a key word there, can. I'm not sure if we will or not. We just need to get a point against Barcelona. But as you've just said, Emery is not the king of the Camp Nou, we'll say. And to be fair, going off the results that we've had in the last couple of weeks, I'm not entirely that confident. It's just going to be so difficult to get a result out of the Camp Nou. So I'm hoping for a draw. I'm hoping for a win, obviously, but I'll be happy with the draw, because I don't see Athletic Club getting a result against Sevilla. personally anyway. But that could come back to bite me, which probably usually does.
Well, if the teams do end up level on points, so, you know, if Villarreal lose and Athletic get the draw, Athletic would qualify by virtue of the head-to-head. So there's something to kind of factor in as well. But
sorry to interrupt. I do feel like even if we don't get Europe, there's a possibility that next season could benefit us personally. Because if you think about the last 10 years of Atletico, they just had a rush straight up into the... They were in Champions League finals. They were winning the league. Sometimes the season after, like this season, they won the league last year, and this season they've just completely... They started really poorly. Maybe we need that step back, because we'd won the Europa League last season. We got to Champions League semi-finals this season. I feel like we do need a break. But that's not me saying I don't want Conference League. I'd be happy with it. And I feel like that's a tournament we can win. Look at the finalists this year. Both of them, I feel like we could beat quite convincingly.
Yep.
But, I wouldn't be too fussed if we don't get Europe next year, because there are players in our squad that, especially if there's people leaving that are quite important to our starting 11, I feel like we would benefit from having a few less games next season, so we can actually prioritise the league and try and get into that top three and try and break that top four. That I feel like we can break into that next season, especially if we don't have extra games next season via Europe. But as I've just said, that's not me asking to not get Europe next season.
Indeed. Well, that's a little bit more optimistic than we started, so that's probably a good place to finish. Thank you very much for your contributions, yeah. Louis, and we'll chat to you again soon.
No problem, mate. Thanks, Matt.
Many thanks and muchas gracias to Louis Scattergood there. There were sort of two teams that confirmed their places in a sense. They both needed a point. They both played out a point. Barcelona drew 0-0 with Getafe. What have you got to say on this, Matt? Because there wasn't a great deal.
No, we didn't see much of it on the multi-camera, multi-goal coverage, did we? Because as you say, there weren't any goals, there weren't many chances in the game. Getafe showed how much of a solid side they are now. Barça were quite content to take the point as well. And, you know, if this was a World Cup third group game when both sides needed a draw, you could have said it was a bit of a biscotto. But, just a word on Getafe. Incredible job that Kike Sanchez-Flores has done. And he's done so well that we've almost forgotten to say how well he's done lately, because they've been so far clear of it. And while it wasn't mathematically sure until today, I don't think anyone really thought they were going to get sucked in again. So from where they were, what was it, 7 straight defeats and... couldn't score a goal, couldn't defend, totally limp and listless. They seemed resigned to relegation from kind of match day 8-9. But then Kike comes in, revolutionises the team. Admittedly, the January signings helped as well. But a fantastic job from him. And Getafe will look to build on next season. And of course, for Barca, they finished second, which quite honestly, from where they were when Xavi came in, was the best they could hope for. And they've qualified for the Supercopa for next season, which is worth, I think, about €8 million. So that'll be very welcome for the board and Matteo Alemany to work his transfer magic. Onwards and upwards for Barca, hopefully under Xavi. We'd like to see a more competitive title race next season. Both sides content with the draw here.
Yeah, I think they benefited a lot from the fact that there were 8 other games on, because if it was just that game, I think the criticism would have been pretty grim in terms of this match. But as you say, for Xavi, I don't think you can ask any more than what he's done. I mean, I know the last sort of month hasn't been great at Barcelona, but overall, take it as a package, Barcelona, I think if they've achieved their targets. Moving on, Athletic still have something to play for. Marcelino said there's a 50% chance he might not be there next season, but they beat Osasuna 2-0, and that leaves them within a point of Villarreal going into the last day of the season. Athletic go to Sevilla, whereas Villarreal go to Barcelona. I mean, how do you even evaluate this? Because it seems like he's 1 foot out the door, but he also might achieve European qualification, which on the whole is probably a good season.
Well, yeah, I have to say, I think... obviously, we've only got his side of it, so I must say that. But I think it's incredibly disrespectful the way that he's been treated, to be very honest. I mean, I know there's going to be presidential elections at Athletic, and all the candidates have their own kind of manifestos, if you like, but for none of them to even kind of acknowledge and speak to Marcelino in terms of continuing, it just seems harsh to me. I think he's done probably the best he could do with the squad he has. He reached another cup final. Okay, they did lose both, which of course is the ultimate result, but they won the Supercoppa in his first month. They've beaten Real Madrid, Atleti and Barca, I think a couple of times each in various cups or Super Cup competitions. And he's got the team playing well. Muniain is playing the best football of his career, I'd argue, right now. And Marcelino's got them a very solid, hard-to-beat side. And do you know what? I quite fancy them to get that seventh spot and reach the Conference League, because Villarreal going to Barcelona, we know what Unai Emery's record is there. It's pretty horrific. And with Sevilla already confirming their place in the top four, I don't think there'll be too much for them to play for. So, you know, that could well be a draw. And when you then look at Villarreal's options at Barca, they could lose that, and in which case Athletic would take it on the head-to-head. So I think that's a very plausible scenario. But yeah, as for Marcelino, I think he's done a very good job. I think it might be best for them all to part ways, given how like you say, acrimony is not even the right word, because it's not really been like that. It's just been kind of, like you say, the open secret that they know that it's not going to continue next season. So it's a strange one. It is a strange one.
Yeah, it is a bit bizarre. And I think Marcelino, for me, he's almost been a victim of the fact that with those cup finals, it's been a bit anticlimactic. I think if he wins one of them, he's universally lauded as a success.
Yeah.
And I think you get to finals and it's very hard to judge people on final losses, in my view. And to an extent, we always come back to it, but like, how much more can you expect a different manager to do without a goal scorer? It is always going to come back to bite you, in my view. It was, I say, Villalibre, who maybe, I'm not holding out a lot of hope, but maybe he'll become that goal scorer. He got the second, and Alex Berenguer got the first in that game. Celta beat Elche 1-0. It was Denis Suarez potentially playing his last game for Celta who got it. Iago Aspas assist. Not a great deal to say on this either, is it? Two teams who don't have a lot to play for, Matt.
No, the bizarre thing was that it was actually played at this time. I mean, originally it was scheduled for Saturday along with Valencia Espanyol. And that seemed fine because neither side had anything to play for. But then, of course, La Liga realised that there could be a kind of four-way tie, I think, on 39 points with Elche. So that could have affected the outcome of relegation. So that's why they had to shove it back. But once again, didn't look great on the optics. And for any match-going fans that had planned a day trip to Balaidos, it wasn't ideal at all. But, you know, the fans that were there got to see a decent Celta performance, decent way to end the season. Iago Aspas trying to get some more goals to cement his place as the Zara winner. But he got an assist, which obviously counts if things are level. So that was good. Denis Suarez, like you say, nice for him to end with a goal if he does go. And of course, Nolito, they gave him a nice send-off at the end of the game too. So Nolito Golito, a nice way for him to wave goodbye to the Celta fans.
Yeah, and Espanyol Valencia, I mean, 1-1 this finish. Geraldo Tomás got on the score sheet, as did Maxi Gomez. Again, not a great deal in terms of the actual game itself to take forward, but Vicente Moreno's gone. That happened in between, and they've been linked with Diego Martinez, who's apparently their first choice. Jose Bordalas on the opposite bench is apparently an option as well. Vicente Moreno achieved his objectives but still gone. What's your kind of take on that, Matt?
I think I was saying this on Twitter the other day. I think he's very much like, you know, those managers or those clubs that always get promoted and then always go down again. I think he's kind of that in-between level. He's clearly very good Segunda manager. He's good at getting teams up. He's done it, I think he's got three or four promotions in 4 years now with Mallorca's double and then Espanyol last season. But then there is that something missing in La Liga. His away record is really awful. And if he didn't have a striker like Raúl de Tomás, I think there would have been a lot more problems this year. Objective achieved, yes. No doubt about that. But Espanyol, I mean, given how much of a shock it was when they went down, they do see themselves as a top half La Liga club, without doubt. And I think they wanted to be in that kind of top half. Maybe not pushing for Europe this season, but certainly not far off it. And you know, the likes of Osasuna, that kind of level, I think, is where Espanyol want to be, and they weren't able to reach that. You say both sides are in kind of turmoil again. They're just stagnating. The form is awful. I think Valencia have gone 9 games without a win now, which is their worst run since 2004. Ranieri didn't last too much longer after that. And again, Bordalas, he's been hamstrung again by not getting the signings he wanted. Paco's talked about that many a time. And yeah, we'll see what the summer brings. Whether they can keep Soler, Gaia, Gerdish, that's absolutely crucial, because if they go, Valencia are going to be in trouble again.
Just on Soler, Paco Polit, obviously go follow him on Twitter. He's done a good thread about the fact that Carlos Soler, who's negotiating a new contract with Valencia in theory, I think Anil Murti, I think it was recorded saying, if you leave for free, then I will kill you in the press. In terms of sort of, yeah, a smear campaign against Soler, if he was to exit without sort of bringing in a big transfer fee, which is just another on the list of things that I'm sure Valencia fans will be thrilled with under the Meriton ownership. Coming on to sort of a final goodbye, I wanted to just say Luis Suarez, who was in tears on the bench after he came off against Sevilla. Potentially his last game in Spanish football. It was his last home game at Atleti. A couple words on that, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, what a player, what a legend. He deserved that moment. He's been a very under-par season by his standards, but I think even when he left Barcelona, there was acknowledgement that he couldn't do the running and the pressing that he needed to at the elite level. Atleti were very grateful to take him on, and of course he went in the Suarez zone last season and won in the league, and of course the fans showed him that banner today. Thank you for making us champions. And yeah, this time last year he was scoring those crucial goals to get Atleti over the line. And it's only a year ago. It seems a lot longer now, but yeah, Luis Suarez is a La Liga legend without question. His record at Barcelona and what he did at Atleti as well. Well over 30 years old. He has said that he wants to continue in Europe. Whether that will be in Spain or not, I don't know. You know, he could go for a kind of a bigger contract in the Premier League, perhaps. Kind of a mid-level team there, or potentially even Serie A. Of course, he was potentially linked there with Juventus and the exam random fiasco story when he was on the way out of Barca. But yeah, Luis Suarez, salute El Pistolero. The Suarez zone has now become the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, no, Luis Suarez, I think it's very hard to realise this when you get players in the twilight of their career, as you say, but just an electric forward. I think we'll really, really miss him once he's gone. It's come to the end of the show. We're going to move on to the MVP now. This was a bit of a struggle as we were trying to keep our eye on several games at once, but we've come up with some choices. Matt, who is your first?
I'm going to have to go with Juanmi. You know, he's not always been the greatest goal scorer, but this season he's really, really turned up big for Betis. And they've been able to count on a few. And when you think about Betis, the strikers they've had, none of them you'd say were elite forwards, but both him and Borja have reached 20 goals this season now in all competitions, which is a great return. Betis have scored 100 goals. And yeah, Juanmi's got 20 of them, 16 in the league. And he's still in with a shout of being the top Spanish scorer. If he can get maybe a hat-trick next week and then Iago Aspas doesn't, he could be there. But yeah, in this game, lovely finishes. The dink over Maximiano was spectacular. And yeah, only 3 shots, 2 goals, XG of 1.28. So he's overperformed in this game, again, for those that like those stats. And yeah, he's just... he's loving life at Betis, and it's just a really good fit, so it's great to see.
Yep, I'm going to go with a substitute who came in for Thibaut Courtois this weekend, Lunin. You have to say, he was very, very good. He stopped a penalty, he made several big saves, and yeah, you're starting to wonder if maybe, I mean, he's a young goalkeeper, maybe he's too good for the Real Madrid bench. How long does he kind of want to sit on there behind Courtois? Because yeah, he made some really great saves, and he's probably the difference between Cadiz being in control of their own fate next weekend and not being. So yeah, credit to Lunin. He came up very big and was very good. Exactly what you want from your substitute and younger goalkeeper. Your second choice, Matt.
I'm going to go for this, perhaps more sentiment than anything, but I'm going to go with José Luis Morales, El Comandante. Levante down. We don't know if Morales will play in La Liga next season. We think he'll probably stay with Levante, try to get them back up. So this is probably his last nomination for our MVP award for at least two seasons. So I think he deserves an honorary mention. In the game again, he was you know, crucial in the turnaround. He got the assist for Oscar Duarte's equaliser, and then he wrapped it up with a late goal to seal the 3-1. And again, he was in tears at the end of the match. And yeah, I just think, you know, he is not the reason Levante are down. We know they can attack well. We know he's a fantastic component of that attack. And yeah, it's so sad because he's such a fantastic player, so elaborate. And you know, 13 goals, 6 assists for the season. That's great numbers. That's really top half numbers, European numbers. So it's a real shame for him to bow out, but at least he did it in style.
Yep, and I'm going to go with a player who you said playing his best football of his career, and I have to agree with that. Iker Muniain was very good today. He got the assist for the sort of first goal from the set piece, and then he sort of launched the counter-attack that led to the second goal. And it is just, he's just so key to Athletic Club. I mean, I probably should have done this before, but I'd like to see the stat of like what percentage of key passes he gives in the Athletic team, because everything revolves around him. If you can shut him down, if you can take him out, Athletic are a totally different team. And he is the sort of key to unlocking defences for them. And they have goal-scoring issues, but they also have creative issues if he's not there, if he's not playing well. So, yeah, another good performance from him. I'm going to move on to the moments now. I don't know what the first one you want to go with is, Matt.
Again, I think I have to mention Luis Suarez, you know, the ovation that he got. And Hector Herrera too, to be fair. He's obviously off as well in the summer. But it was just nice that he got that moment because, of course, you know, when he left Liverpool, it was very much a bit of a storm after they hadn't failed. They'd obviously failed to win the league in spectacular style. And there was a lot of acrimony around his bite in the World Cup. And he was coming into Barcelona on the back of a ban. And then, of course, when he leaves Barcelona, there's, you know, no love lost at all between him and Bartomeu. And he's just kind of shoved out the door rather ignominiously. So I think it's really nice that he gets a proper send-off from a club, because I'm sure all three fan bases love him massively. Certainly did at the time that he left. And yeah, he deserves that kind of send-off because, like you said, he's a La Liga legend. He's a legend of European football in the last 10, 15 years.
100%. I can't go anywhere but the Son Mosh. What a moment.
Mosh pit.
The mosh pit. It was Abdon Pratt's fantastic. I mean, as you say, it's not the cleanest goal, but the absolute scenes at the end of the match, both in the stands, on the pitch. I don't think anyone, there was no player that people would have been more pleased for than Abdon, because he is this kind of lovable, hard-working striker who maybe not technically good enough for La Liga. I don't want to slate him on his big day, but yeah, fantastic moment. And that's what football's about. Stoppage time, winners, everyone celebrating to sort of keep the hope alive. That's what it's all about for me. I think it would be absolutely wrong if we were to play out on anything else this week. I think, unless you have any other business, we'll wrap it up there, Matt.
Yep, again, just sorry to see Alaves go. That's 2 out of 3 now. We'll obviously find out next week who joins them, but quite a lot sorted in the league. We know who's going to be the Champions League. We know who's going to be in the Europa League. It's just that 7th spot for the Conference League and that final relegation spot. But a thrilling day of action. Pleasure to join you to discuss it all. We can't wait for next week to do it all again.
Thank you, Matt. Thanks for being here. Thanks to Louis Scatchergood and Alan Feely, who were on earlier to give us their insight. Go check out the website, laligalowdown.com. There's some good blog stuff on there. Iker Muniain, as Sam mentioned, I think in the last podcast, is Louis Scattergood's latest piece. But there's plenty on there from a wide variety of clubs. Obviously, go follow us on Twitter as well. That's where you can vote for your MVP. Yeah, we'll see you there. But thank you for listening. And adeu, as they would say in Mallorca.
Atención, ¿qué pasa, Mallorca?
¡Gol! ¡Gol del Mallorca! Minuto 91. Se viene abajo Son Mosh. La locura, Abdon Pratt. En el segundo palo. Marcó un gol del ascenso in extremis. Y hoy Abdón Pras saltó en los últimos minutos para buscar el milagro. Le cae el balón muerto en el área. Todo el banquillo. Una piña con Abdón. El delantero mallorquín marca el segundo. Mallorca 2, Rayo 1.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.